The Autoblog podcast is presented by the Salvation Army. Your donations help those in need win their daily battles to survive poverty. To give, ask your smart speaker to make a donation to the Salvation Army or make your gift at salvationarmyusa.org.
Welcome to another episode of the Autoblog Podcast. Today, we're going to talk about the LA Auto Show. I'm Greg Migliori. Joining me today in the studio is Senior Editor John Snyder. What's up, man?
Hey, how's it going? It's a pretty green auto show.
It's a very green auto show. Also in the studio, Assistant Editor Zach Palmer.
What's up? We're a long ways from LA, but still feeling a lot of the power from that show. It's a pretty big show this year.
Yeah.
I kind of wish I had gone. I thought about going, then thought, well, you know, I've got some other things to do. We've got people out there. Not a big deal. But this is the second straight year I wish I had gone to LA. It's a cool show this year. So I guess we got to jump right in with the Ford Mustang Mach-E. Huge reveal. It actually happened Sunday night. Off-site, kind of in Tesla's neighborhood. Interesting, you know, I'm sure purely coincidental choice of, you know, revealing location. And then, you know, of course, Ford is at the LA Auto Show. So, you know, we've really looked at this car from all angles, looked at the name from all angles, definitely head to our site. We probably have close to a dozen stories up about this thing now, but, and definitely we want to hear what you think. Chime in on the comments, reach out to us on socials. But real quick reactions for the podcast audience. Let's start with you, Zach.
So the car, I love it. I think it's, you know, it's exactly what the market needs right now. It needs a fast electric crossover, which you alluded to with the name. I don't love it. It really just doesn't feel like a Mustang to me. It looks a lot like a CX-5, especially if you remove the black roof and think about it being an actually like painted color of the car. It just doesn't really look that unique or special to me. But that said, I'm very, very excited to drive it. It looks very fast, especially the GT and the GT Performance trim. You know, really, really psyched to actually get behind the wheel of this car. The interior is like totally new from Ford, like nothing we've seen before. It looks, you know, a whole lot, you know, inspired from Tesla with that giant 15 plus inch screen in the center. But it does have the instrument cluster, which I really like.
Yeah.
That's a big plus for me.
Yeah, right in front of you too. That's important. Yeah, this is I love the car too, on its own. And I keep thinking about the Mustang name. I understand why they brought this out first. You know, if you want to sell EVs, you know, give us a crossover. But I kind of really wish that Ford would have kicked off its, you know, new EV program with an actual electric Mustang. That made it like super desirable, I think. Wouldn't have pissed off as many Mustang fans by making an actual electric Mustang coupe. And it would make EVs cool for Ford. You know, everyone would be like, oh, Ford's EVs, you know, the very first one is this super fast actual Mustang. I think that would have been a good move for them. I know they wouldn't probably have sold as many as they will of this. But that might not be, that might not have been an issue with supply constraints for batteries. I think they should have done a real Mustang first.
So I agree with that. I don't know if I necessarily really care if they did it first or not, but I do 100% think they should do an all electric Mustang. I think that would be outstanding. Just the performance, then you get the traditional looks of the Mustang. That's awesome. The naming part is where I think I get a little tripped up with this particular product. Just looking at it on its merits, I think this is going to be a winner. It's, you know, it's a Tesla fighter. It appeals to a whole new potential kind of buyer for Ford, which I think is great. I think it looks pretty good. It's a good looking crossover. all those things. So that all,
it's priced well too.
It's priced really very wisely, I would say. For me though, the hang up a little bit is the Mustang naming. Like, I'm okay with it. And I think what I think Ford did here is they took basically their best name, you know, Mustang, F-150, maybe Bronco. But I mean, what's probably their single best name? It's probably Mustang. Mm-hmm. Let's put it on their single most advanced and maybe important product going forward, you know, debating whether this or the F-150, you know, could be more important.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, we're going to play the best hand we can. I get that. That to me does make sense. Like, sometimes in life, you can't just like, you know, make everything into these neat boxes. You got to like take the best things that are in front of you and roll with it. And that's what I think they did here. And I applaud that. I think that's a bold play. That being said, personally, it is a little weird to look at a Mustang that's sort of shaped like this. To look at it from the other way, though, let's say they call this the Ford, I don't know, the Ford, pick a name that's sort of environmentally sounding, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Would this have had the impact? Probably not. Because it's a Mustang, it gets everybody's attention. Everybody knows what a Mustang is. If they had called it the Ford, like, you know, I don't know, like I said, the Ford, they what's... Could-
They could just drop Mustang, just call it the Ford Mach-E.
Yeah.
The Ford, that sounds awesome to me. You know, it has some Mustang heritage, some Mustang feel to it. You could make the car look a lot like it does now and just call it.
You could still
it,
put the pony badge on
yeah,
it.
And yeah. You can call it a Mustang inspired car, just calling it Mach-E because everybody understands, you know, the heritage and the history behind, you know, what the word Mach means when it's attached to a Mustang.
Right.
I just don't think that you need to put it on an electric SUV. Just doesn't feel right.
I think you're articulating what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to put it in all these different like angles. But yeah, in a nutshell, that's kind of what I'm trying to say. And I think Mach-E would have probably been just better without Mustang. I mean, that's my opinion. But, you know, I also think they want to hang Mustang on this thing to make it as strong as they can going to the market. And I do get that too. I think if they had called this like the Focus Electric or something like that, doesn't cut through the clutter. It doesn't sort of expand Ford to like this new audience. It doesn't, you know, get on people's radars, you know, by making it Mustang, it does.
I think the, one of our commenters had on the reveal article had a good, they should have brought back the Galaxy name and called it the Galax-E.
That's an awesome comment.
That's a great idea.
Brilliant. I love it. Side note, I've always thought they should bring back the Galaxy name.
Yeah.
I love the Galaxies from the 60s. Also the Falcons. Love the Falcons.
Yeah.
That's a great name. They should have called this thing the Falcon.
They could have.
But I'm with Zach. I think probably just going with Ford Mach-E would have been the way to go.
Ford Mach-E. It's simple. It's short. Yeah. The one thing that does give me hope by them putting the Mustang name on it, that means it has to be really, really good to drive. So I'm hopeful that this, you know, might be better than pretty much every other electric crossover out there right now to drive. You know, the I-Pace is really good. It's quick. Mm-hmm. It handles well. The e-tron is sort of fun to drive. We obviously haven't driven the Tesla Model Y yet. But, you know, among all those, if you're a driving enthusiast and you want an electric crossover, I'm thinking that this one is probably going to be the one to get just because Ford has kind of quartered themselves here and it's a Mustang. It has to be good, right?
That's what I think. It was either Bill Ford or Jim Hackett. That's the Ford executive chairman and CEO, respectively. I think it was Bill Ford, actually, though, who said that he wasn't really wild about calling it a Mustang until he drove it. Now, granted, of course, what's he going to say? Exactly. But, you know, what's he going to say? But I actually do think that does have some credence because, I mean, Bill Ford's a huge Mustang guy. And obviously, if somebody was going to say, yeah, no, we're not going to do that, you know, he probably has a little bit of clout around there. He could put his foot down and say no. So I do expect this thing to drive pretty amazing. I'm actually kind of intrigued about like just how much stuff you're going to be able to put in it too. Like, is my dog going to be able to lay across the back seat? How many groceries can I get in the trunk? You know, stuff like that. All these new questions I think get to be raised. To dig down a little bit more on the name, I just got this email this morning from AutoList, and they did a survey saying that consumers were basically evenly split on whether they would prefer a Mach-E or a Model Y, 51 to 49%. with the Ford coming out just a bit ahead, don't know what the margin of error is, you know, with all the polling and politics going on. Anyways, 46% of respondents said they didn't like the use of Mustang for the new electric crossover. 20% did, and 34% were undecided. So, you know, it seems like, at least according to this AutoList survey, you get almost half the people saying, I don't know about Mustang. And then there's like sort of like 20% do. And then this wide swath, almost a third of the electorate, if you will, are like not really sure what they think.
Yeah. I mean, and from the people that I've talked to, that people that don't even really care about cars, they're questioning, like, why is this a Mustang? This doesn't look like a Mustang to me. It's an SUV. And I mean, they're really changing the whole definition of what people see as a Mustang with this, and you can't really take that back. It's a move that they've made, and it is what it is now for sure.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think too, it reminds me a little bit of like what Chevy did with the Blazer. They took the Blazer name and slapped it on a crossover that really wasn't like any of the old school Blazers. And you know, their argument was, hey, we have this great name, we're going to use it. We have an SUV, or it's more of a crossover thing, but we're going to use it on this thing because it's the best hand we have to play. Yeah, it's not like the old one, get over it, it's fine. Ironically enough, another parallel here, you could argue the Blazer looks about as much like a Camaro as the Mach-E looks like the conventional Mustang coupe.
Yeah.
So, and I think Chevy kind of went like that middle ground saying, well, it's Camaro inspired, but they didn't call it a Camaro. They called it a Blazer. So, you know, the whole name game tactics are pretty interesting right now.
I agree.
I bet you can't wait to drive this thing, though.
Yeah, I know. I could talk about the name forever, but like the specs on the car are actually really cool. And I really like the GT with they all have the same big motor on the rear axle and then a smaller one on the front, but the GT has that big motor on the front too. And the way it is able to, you know, put power between the two axles, this thing should be a riot to drive if, you know, if its specs are to be, you know, any indication. And it's, I honestly think it looks really cool too. I do think it looks really cool. I know some people don't. The one thing I'm a little concerned about is that interior. I'm tired of these giant tablets. I'm curious to see like how many of the functions of the vehicle are actually buried in that thing. Because that was a big deal for me with, you know, like the Tesla Model 3. I hate that. I hate having to dig through menus. And even like, you know, Volvo or, you know, other companies that start putting everything in the menu. I'll be curious to see how this not just drives, but how it is to use on a day-to-day basis. Because a user interface can make it or break it depending on, you know, that, but I don't see a lot of hard buttons in this interior.
I think that's the idea too. It's like, gotta be as close to Tesla as possible. Yeah, we could talk about this in a few minutes. The Legacy that I just drove last night had a similar issue. So it's not just like cutting edge future EVs. It's like everybody's slapping an iPad in the middle of the car and maybe taking 3 to 4 buttons away that we might like.
Yeah. Obviously having been in or driven a Mach-E yet, I think that the amount of physical buttons is definitely an improvement over like the Model 3 or the Model Y. You do actually have a big round volume knob that you can twist, and there are a ton of buttons on the steering wheel itself as well, which, I end up using the buttons on the steering wheel a lot more than I end up trying to adjust the volume or seek or tune on the actual screen or physical buttons in any car. And then Ford actually, it looks like they have, I don't know, at least 3 or 4 buttons over by your left knee where they typically have the headlight scroller where you can where you can turn the headlights on. So there are definitely more buttons in here than a Tesla, but it is encroaching on that territory of, you know, touchscreen everything. Looks like all of your climate controls are on this screen. Anything you do on the infotainment is definitely on this screen.
I need redundant buttons for the climate control because, like, this morning it was not actually even that cold here for, you know, for Michigan anyway. In, like, the screen in the Forester wasn't quite working. Now, that's not to say it won't work amazing in the Ford, but it seems like touchscreens don't work as well when your hands are a little cold. And I don't know. I like to have that redundant thing. Going down a rabbit hole here, but I don't know. Mustang, you also kind of want a little bit of, you know, buttons, switches, a few more of them.
I mean, it's 10 degrees outside. I want to wear gloves. and big, thick gloves don't really work that well on a touchscreen you have to be super precise on.
So let's kind of, there were other cars in LA. let's do like a quick lightning round here and I'll start. Name, yes or no. I'm going to say no. I get why they did it, but I'm going to say no. And I'm going to take the Zach position and say they should have just called it the Ford Mach-E. Keep the Mustang sort of pure, maybe do an all-electric Mustang, but I think it would have been better to not use Mustang. Kind of a close call, but again, I'm going to say no. Do I like how it looks? I'm going to say, yeah, I think it looks pretty good. I'm just looking at it strictly how it looks, not what the name means, all that other stuff. I just think in a vacuum, it looks pretty good. And about the driving capabilities and what it means for Ford, I think it definitely has potential to be a home run. So over to you, John. Name, how's it look, and then implications.
Okay. Name, no. Looks, yes. I like the way it looks. And implications, yes, this is gonna be good for Ford, in general. Ford needs electric car, and I'm glad that they're doing it with a focus on performance, and it basically has to be an SUV. So even though I still would like the electric Mustang, actual Mustang as a halo car, this is good.
Sounds good, Zach.
Name, definite no. Make it Mach-E, and I'm all in on it. But the Mustang, that's a no from me. Looks, all of them except for the GT trim, I don't really care for that much. I find it to be a little boring. The GT though, I dig that. I like the bigger spoiler, the mesh grill that's different than the body color, all the extra aggressive treatments on the GT, like and even the GT performance looks even better.
Yeah.
And then, you know, as far as like implications, what I think it's going to be, I think it's going to be great. It's an electric crossover. The only thing I wish that Ford was doing was that it was coming out sooner. We're going to have to wait an entire year for it to actually hit the street. And the GT isn't coming out until early 2021. So this is somewhat uncharacteristic of Ford. I think, I'm not sure that they've actually revealed a car and then, oh, it's time to wait like a full year to actually see it on the road. So, but yeah, I mean, ultimately, I think it will be good.
Have we actually seen the Bronco yet, as I think about this out loud?
No, we haven't.
I was going to say, I mean, they haven't revealed it, but I guess they announced it, and then it's like, okay, it's not going to be on sale until, you know, far into the future. So there's some precedent for this really long rollout, but yeah, to your point, this is kind of weird. I think they kind of needed to let everybody know, yeah, we're doing EVs. Don't forget, we're doing EVs, you know? Okay. Other things at the LA show. I know you guys were both pretty fired up about the RAV4 Prime Optimus style. I think that's cool. I'm kind of all over the fence on the RAV4, but I think, you know, what Toyota's doing to it now with this electrification is really cool. So maybe, John, you want to break that down real quick?
Sure. I think the most interesting thing here is the all-electric range, which is 39 miles.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
For a crossover.
That's a lot. And that's more than most people like commute back and forth in a day, and then some. So depending on, you know, how easy it is to keep in electric mode, this will be, you know, you won't have to go to the gas station very often at all. You know, maybe once a month for most people. 5.8 seconds from 0 to 60 for the segment, that's really good. That's pretty quick. So
that's like a Mustang was from 15 years ago.
And it's got 302 horsepower. It'll only be available in the SE and XSE trim levels, but that's okay. But yeah, I think it's going to be pretty sweet. Again, that 39 miles of battery power is really impressive.
I think they should have maybe given it Supra styling cues and used the Supra name on it. Extend the range.
The Toyota RAV4 Supra Edition.
Right.
Oh, my God.
It'd be great for our search engines, right? I think this is cool, though. It's like, you know, Family Guy, I think this is awesome. One kid, you could put him in there, get some, like, almost 40 miles of range. Like this a lot. Also good for all people, if you will. I hate to sometimes throw the family lens on it. But yeah, it's a cool looking crossover. Zach, you were kind of fired up about this too.
Yeah, no, I love the fact that Toyota is, taking green cars and they're making them fun. Like the fact that this plug-in hybrid is actually going to be like really fun to drive thanks to making it a plug-in. You know, it's not a boring green car. It's actually the fastest RAV4 in the lineup. And it's going to be the most fun to drive.
We're seeing that a lot now. Is the green car is the fastest one.
Yeah. And no, I am so for that. You know, every opportunity you can make to make it more efficient and more fun to drive, I am completely for it. You know, it makes a car that is otherwise, you know, a pretty boring-ish crossover. The RAV4 is, you know, it's one of the best-selling crossovers out there, you know. Ton of people buy them, but they're not exactly the most exciting thing. And plug-in hybrid technology has changed it into something that enthusiasts can kind of get excited about.
Totally. The redesign from a couple years ago to make it more of like a outdoorsy sort of vehicle, I think really helped it.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it just looks a little cooler. It's, cool. How about, since I'm taking a sip of seltzer water, talk about the Kia Seltos real quick.
Okay.
That one just came out of nowhere for me. I think it looks really good. I kind of like the name. I hate to get overly done with like names here. This is a great line here in a story written by one of our European freelancers, Ronan Glan. He says, named after Seltos, the son of Hercules, the Seltos with an S. ... goes on. But yeah, it's named after the son of Hercules. That's kind of amazing. And let's see.
I mean, it kind of reminds me of the Venue.
I think it basically is like a Kia version of the Hyundai Venue.
But it's honestly. On I think it's on a different platform.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
But so I'm curious to see why they did that, but
it goes between the Soul and the Sportage.
Yeah.
So,
but it looks pretty cool. It looks fun. I can see myself driving one of these.
Yeah. I mean, I think that if you were in the market for a Soul and you really like that car, but you want all-wheel drive,
yeah,
this is the car to get. Because that's the
really
Soul doesn't
point.
Offer all-wheel
that's,
drive.
Yeah, that's a really,
yeah,
really,
great
really
point.
Good point.
Frankly, I like this better than the Venue and the Soul, just by looks. I think that front end looks great. Interesting powertrain stuff, basically straight out of the, you know, the Kia catalog. But yeah, I this to me was a little bit of a sleeper car for the show.
I really like the proportions of it too. It's got a nice high belt line. I like the you know, angle of the I mean, that's a heavily raked windshield, and then like not quite straight up and down in the back, but there's a little angle to it, but it's kind of like there's a little bit of a boxiness back there. Yeah, that two-tone like black roof with, you know, against the body color looks pretty good. This is I'm not always a big fan of like the floating roof look, but this is tasteful. Yeah.
I'm actually going to have to disagree with you there, John.
Okay.
I don't like the way this thing looks. it's so busy up front. It has this like really strange like stacked headlight design.
Yeah, that's
that it just it looks unnatural, and then it flows into like a honeycomb grill, but then right below that honeycomb grill is like a slatted grill. So there's like two designs stacked right on top of each other there, and I mean, and you actually have a third headlight element as fog lights down below. just feels like a bit overwrought and like there's too much there.
Yeah, the front, yeah, there's definitely a lot going on up front there.
The rear is not as bad. The rear is, no. It feels like a normal crossover.
Yeah.
Nothing truly offensive there for me.
The rear looks like a Nissan Rogue, I think.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
I really like the grill up front. I think those headlights, they're kind of like stacked, if you will. Love that. It's got a version of that sort of tiger shark grill, if you really want to look closely. And I like sort of like the steep, almost like bow front clip that it's got going on. I like this thing. I'm excited to drive it. And then I may be burying the lead here. Check out at the bottom of our story, we have something called the X-Line Trail Attack and the X-Line Urban. Holy cow, man. Those things are awesome looking.
Yeah. Those are, yeah, I'd like to see what they could do with this. If they do end up offering, you know, like off-road or specialized versions of it, it could be really cool because those do look pretty sweet.
Yeah, I could totally see this being, you know, there could be like 5 or 6 SEMA builds of this next year.
Yeah, just yeah, for sure.
Off-road the Seltos, why not? It's definitely way more rugged than the Soul, so I'm all for it.
Yeah.
Sometimes those smaller to mid-sized crossovers fit better off-road, and that's like a thing that I like. I don't want to be like, oh, I just clipped a tree. Whoops. You know? All right. Other thoughts from LA, the Lexus LC500 convertible?
That, I think, is the most beautiful car at the show to me. The color that they revealed it in is their gorgeous structural blue.
I love that color. That's like one of my favorite automotive colors of all time.
Yeah.
It's not even really blue pigment. It's like this special compound that refracts light in a certain way makes it look blue. I think it's, you know, inspired by there's a certain type of butterfly that has the same sort of thing. I think blue jays maybe even have that same thing. They don't have like blue pigment in their feathers. It's just the structure of their feathers reflects light in a certain way, and which is really interesting to me. And it looks really, really good on this car.
Fantastic.
Great on this
car. Yeah, no, seeing this car in this color reminded me, like, okay, I have to go, like, read about structural blue again. Like,
yeah.
I need to. I mean, it took them 15 years to actually develop this paint. Who spends 15 years developing an actual paint color for a car? And then, you know, it's so difficult to make that they're only able to make enough paint to paint 300 cars, 300 LC500s in this color every single year. And they're only making 100 of them in the LC500 convertible version. I think James Ryswick wrote this story for us. He actually details like a lot of really cool things that they did engineering-wise to make the convertible work. They added a lot more structural bracing, managed to take some weight out. I think that this car is going to be, you know, just as good, if not, you know, better to drive than the actual LC500, just because you can have that top down and hear the beautiful 5-liter V8.
Yeah, that's
right
a good
behind
point.
You.
It's a little bit harder to hear in the hard top.
Yeah,
so.
And it sounds really good in the hard top, but just imagine that not being there.
Okay, well, I'm usually not a convertible guy, but I think I'm sold on this one.
I would say forget about the paint. It's the motor is the great part about this thing. That V8 is amazing.
It really is.
Yeah, very cool. Other thoughts from LA? We could literally sit here for another 2 hours and talk. But other cool things from LA?
There's the Audi RS Q8, which is pretty cool.
That thing is nuts. It was like performance SUV central over there. They had this. There's the Mercedes AMG GLE 63S.
Right.
The GLS 63.
The GLS 63 kind of blew me away. I'm like, wow, that's a lot of car right there.
Yeah. And the wheels on that, those like, black.
The monoblock AMG wheels.
Yeah.
They're 23-inch monoblock wheels.
Which is, it's a little much.
It's a bit much. I really like the look
cool.
On the AMG GT four-door coupe with those wheels. Less enthused about it on the SUV, but I can still dig it. If I see that rolling by, like, I will give whoever bought that a thumbs up.
Yeah,
that
for sure.
Is really freaking cool.
I'm really finding I like the Q8 too. Just it's at first I was like, I don't know what they're doing with this thing here, But, you know, seeing the RS version in just in general, I've seen some Q8s on the road. I'm like, yeah, I really think I like this thing now. Not the most practical vehicle, but, you know, cool. Yeah,
it's 600 horsepower.
It's insane. That's like what a Shelby had, like, not that long ago.
And 0 to 62 miles per hour in 3.8 seconds. And goes to 124 miles per hour in 13.7 seconds.
That's insane.
And it'll do 189 miles per hour.
189 miles per hour.
We're going to go to Kroger and we're going to do it at 189 miles an hour. We're going to put the dog in the back. Wow. Yeah, I mean, it's an RS. It's kind of its own thing.
Yeah.
It does what I like performance SUVs to do from a design perspective, too. They got rid of the plastic wheel arches and they painted them body color.
Yeah.
It brings the whole thing way lower to the ground. Makes it look a lot more like a hatchback than a rugged crossover as well.
I agree with you on that point. And in general,
yeah,
hate the plastic wheel arches on any SUV unless there's like a purpose for it. I hate it. It drives me crazy. but yeah, so if you're going to paint it body color, please do. That makes, to me, it just classes up any SUV.
Yeah.
Agreed.
I digress. But yeah, that's a bit of a sore spot with me. All right. Well, that's the LA Auto Show. You guys have both been doing a lot of hard work. So if you're listening along, check out the articles. These guys have been really, you know, cranking out. Be sure to check out all of our coverage on the LA Auto Show on Autoblog. Hit us up on all of our social platforms. Tell us what you think. Right now we're going to transition over and talk about what we've been driving. So let's talk about the Chevy Colorado. This is a crew cab LTZ four-wheel drive, but the story here is it's a Duramax diesel.
Mm-hmm.
John and Zach, you took this to Ann Arbor last couple nights. This thing looks like a fire engine. It's bright red, tons of chrome. I think it looks awesome, but the diesel.
Yeah. So I drove the Ram EcoDiesel a couple months ago. And so I was sort of comparing this to that. I feel like the diesel in this is a really good fit for this truck. It's not too loud, but when you're outside of it and you hear it, it sounds really good. Paired to that 10-speed automatic, it's pretty nice. When sort of some diesels, you know, start to run out of steam as you're, you know, getting on the highway, higher in the rev range, it's always sort of in the right spot. It's got more gears to choose from. Plus, it's got a little bit more horsepower, like 17 more horsepower than that. So a little bit longer lasting. You can bring it out a little bit better. But yeah, just in general, it was very smooth, very comfortable, a good fit for this truck, and yeah, I liked it. And this brought the whole Silverado up in my general estimation. Now I'd put it, you know, probably on par with the F-150, where I used to put the F-150 in front of it. Ram's still my favorite, but.
Yeah. I would agree with that assessment, and the Silverado is really starting to, I'm really starting to warm on the Silverado. It's kind of trim specific, but
yes.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm warming up to it. Sorry, Zach, cut you off.
I don't think that I'm as warm to the Silverado as you guys, but I think that this particular configuration of the Silverado is pretty freaking good. The big thing with this is that it beats pretty much every other diesel truck when it comes to fuel economy. I tried my best to get, you know, as good a mileage as I could this morning when I was driving in. I managed 28 miles per gallon.
That's awesome.
And that's on about a 50-mile commute. About like 40 miles of it is on the highway. The other 10 is like city driving. I know the configuration that we had, it's rated at 29 mpg on the highway. So I thought that 28 mpg overall was a fantastic number to get with a pickup the size that it is. You know, it was a crew cab. It had a huge bed on it.
Yeah,
I think it was at least a 6.5-foot bed, and four-wheel drive.
Mm-hmm.
So getting 28 miles per gallon was just absolutely shocking to me. I know pretty much every other truck that I drive back and forth to home, I'm lucky if I crack 21, 22, maybe.
Yeah, I did 25.2 over the course of 100 miles without even thinking about it, with actually, you know, driving it pretty fast and, you know, not caring at all about fuel economy, yeah. not thinking about it one bit.
Yeah.
You know, checked it at the end you know, I think it's rated 25 combined.
You are correct. 25 combined, 23 city, 29 highway.
So my driving was a little, highway heavy. So I definitely could have easily brought that up. And you did.
Yeah.
You know, you did achieve closer to that 29. So that's cool. That's kind of realistic. I'm really curious. We got to get the Ram EcoDiesel here and do that same route and see, what that ends up being, because that I think is 24 miles per gallon combined, so it's pretty darn close.
It's close.
It's
yeah.
worse in the city, but I think it might also be 29 on the highway.
Yeah.
So going with two wheel configurations, as in just the rear wheel drive models, a little bit apples to apples, but the two wheel drive Duramax Chevy is 33 on the highway.
Yeah.
And then the PowerStroke Turbo Diesel is 30 on the highway with the Ford. And then the Ram 1500, the Eco Diesel, is 32 on the highway. And these are all rear-wheel drive comparisons. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, I think, frankly, just good. It's, like, cool to see that, like, full-size trucks could offer this kind of capability with diesel technology and light-duty applications.
Yeah.
The fact that you can drive around in, you know, a 5,500, nearly 6,000-pound truck that can tow 10,000-ish pounds. Mm-hmm. And get the same fuel economy as like a compact crossover.
That's an awesome example. Yeah,
nuts to me. I mean, obviously you are going to pay a little bit more at the pump for diesel,
and at the dealership,
and right. at the dealership certainly. But you know, to see those huge numbers pop up on a vehicle this size is awesome. And you know, the actual driving characteristics of it is as well. They're very smooth.
Mm-hmm.
It's quiet. It's refined. Now that you don't really have much of a loud noise from that diesel that you get from other diesels out there.
Yeah.
It's just silently goes about its work. Very torquey down low. Mm-hmm. The thing feels quick. The 10-speed automatic, like you said, it was always in the right spot for me as well. Just a super great car to drive. You know, I have my other issues with a Silverado when it comes to the interior and the ride quality versus a Ram or an F-150, but I think this powertrain is, you know, right at the top of the class, if not the best.
So question for you guys, what would make you decide to get a light duty diesel engine if you were going to buy a pickup truck? Because there's so many powertrain choices right now, I think, in the full-size pickup truck segment that... I mean, to me, a diesel engine's interesting. It's cool,
It's really hard to justify, though.
Yeah, like...
just because of the added cost.
Yeah.
The cost. I mean, I guess here's what would do it for me. If I had a lot of highway commuting and I had like
a
lot of towing.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what would do it for me. Yeah. I don't think... maybe just the highway stuff, because I kind of like long commutes and I like, you know, highway miles. There's something gratifying about getting good fuel economy. But, I mean, you really would need both of those, I think, to justify this engine.
If I had an Airstream or a boat, then I would probably do the diesel, because I'd be going up north and I'd, you know, but otherwise, no.
Yeah, to justify the cost is tricky.
Yeah, I mean, I think that your points are perfect. It's exactly what I'd do, too. I mean, I'd also feel like I'd have to keep this car for a while, because I would probably be doing the math like, okay, I need to drive this car for this many years.
Yeah, 15 years until you know, it makes up its fuel cost.
Until it makes up the fuel cost versus what I actually paid for it at the dealer.
You know? Yeah, I'm right there with you. And I think with a full-size truck, that might not be as hard, because frankly, people get these things almost like heirlooms and keep them, you know? So that might not be as hard, but yeah, I don't know. If you're going to start really doing the math, I think this is a slight... different shifted conversation here, but to me, I'd rather be worried about how my hybrid or electric car is going to pay off versus my diesel pickup truck.
For sure.
Yeah.
How about we talk about the 2020 Subaru Legacy?
Yes, do it.
Very nice car. Have you guys done your driver's notes yet?
I have, yes.
Yeah.
What did you do it on? I'm asking because I'm going to do mine and I need to know what I'm going to write about.
I talked about the technology for the most part.
Interesting.
Yeah,
that,
Go ahead, start there.
So the
new Legacy, it has a huge 11.6-inch screen front and center. You know, getting right into it, I think it looks awesome.
Yeah, it's the same thing that's in the new Outback.
Yeah, exactly. And it really gives the cabin a super premium look, super premium vibe. I mean, the whole interior design is just much more upscale on the new Legacy versus the old one. But, I mean, there's also the actual functionality and using that screen that I found a few issues with.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I first started up in the morning, cold morning, I went to go instantly put my heated seats on. And, I mean, there's no physical button for the heated seat, so you actually have to navigate through some menus to get it. And unfortunately, there was a bit of lag trying to get through the menus. You know, I press the heated seat button, it's one potato, two potato, three potato, and then the menu comes up, and then it's like, okay, where is the little heated seat button in here? It's pretty small and somewhat hidden, and then you can press that, and then eventually, yes, then your heated seats are on. And it may seem like a somewhat trivial complaint, but it is, you know, it took me like 7-8 seconds for me to turn my heated seats on, which is a function that I'm normally used to doing in a split second, like no time at all.
Like in the Forester that we have as our long termer, you just hit the switch.
There's just
done.
A switch and it's on instantly. You don't
and
even have to
work.
Think about it. Yeah. And then, I mean, the screen itself, though, it looks nice. It's sort of like a blown up version of what Subaru's infotainment systems of the past couple of years have been in all their new vehicles that they're putting out. You can use Apple CarPlay or Android Auto. It's not the best application, I think, for that, just because it is vertical and you get stuck in it takes up 1/3 of the screen, whereas a lot of the horizontal screens that we have now, like a big widescreen display, the phone app control can take the entire screen, which I think is a big benefit of that.
You know, I didn't use CarPlay in it, but when you use it, so it takes up part of the screen, is part of the rest of the screen still like normal vehicle functions?
Yeah, it's like a split screen. Like,
I like that a lot.
Like the RAM 12-inch screen.
Yeah.
So now, I liked that before Apple CarPlay and Android Auto updated their apps so that you could see what is you're currently playing for music and your navigation on the same screen.
Yeah.
But now, both Apple CarPlay and Android Auto let you do that, and I don't really feel like I need that bottom screen for anything else because everything is actually in the phone app that I need. It's a small thing, but it does sort of take away that advantage of having that vertical split screen for me now.
Fair enough. I was using the same sort of setup in the Volvo V60 we had.
Yeah.
And I really liked having, you know, the vehicle functions at the top, so I didn't have to exit out of CarPlay to like dig into vehicle menus and have like my music and my navigation down at the bottom and guiding me where I need to go. I thought it was pretty convenient, but I honestly I didn't try it in this one.
Yeah. So.
I do like the vertical screen. Just it looks cool. The map is clear.
Very clear.
Fairly easy to use. But just rather than, you know, reiterating everything Zach just said, I agree. It's a little overdone. They should have had like one or two more buttons, three or four more buttons. Kept it a little bit simpler. I think it's just, yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's a little too hard to work or like on a cold morning, you want to get in your Subaru and you want to just hit the seat heaters on.
Yeah.
You don't want to like hit it and wonder, oh, my circulation's not going, it's not picking up my fingerprints to warm up the seats, you know, the vent is going too hard and you're trying to like struggle to get it down. So little things, this is a far better touchscreen and it's more receptive than these would have been even 2 or 3 years ago.
For sure.
Like
definitely.
Try to work Cadillac Q from 2013 and like that is a bad one. This isn't bad, but yeah. It's also not great. Let's put it that way. But the rest of the car I really liked.
Oh yeah.
Interior definitely. Is gorgeous. That like sort of
really nice.
Tan and like the dark pieces and nice accents. Subaru's getting there with interiors.
Yeah, they've been struggling. I mean, you know, I was a longtime Subaru owner, and you know, that was my biggest criticism. You know, up until just a couple of years ago. They finally started doing interiors better. The Forester, the interior is considerably better now. The Crosstrek is, like, the Crosstrek Hybrid's interior is really cool. And then, yeah, the Outback and the Legacy now are, they're wonderful interiors. And they're very comfortable. The seats are way more comfortable than they used to be. Everything sort of fits better. There's not, like, this looseness in the leather and stuff like that. Definitely higher quality than it used to be. It's finally getting to where I feel like it should be.
I went on the launch of the Legacy back in, I want to say, 09. This is a couple generations ago. I was at Auto Week, and it was a great trip. It was out in Seattle. You know, very cool trip. But, I mean, just thinking back to what that car was, that car would be like an okay used car now. I mean, if you're in the market for a decade-old car. This thing just, this would have felt like a luxury car back then. Mm-hmm, and yeah. This is only $36,000 or so. Just to me, Subaru's done a really good job of iterating, advancing their interiors, and getting like the right kind of feel in there, the right amount of tech, the right amount of just creature comforts. John, the seats, that like totally rings true. I remember sitting in older Foresters and Legacies, and the seats were terrible.
Yeah.
Like you couldn't get comfortable. The materials, even in the upper trims, was just bad. You were like, what is going on here? You know? So, I mean, this is a very solid car. I think it's, you know, granted, we're in the Touring XT trim, which is, you know, pretty nice, you know, nice trim, if you will.
Yeah.
But
and with the turbo engine and
260 horsepower. That's CVT, though. How'd you guys feel about the CVT?
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you guys, is how you felt about this powertrain setup, because it is new. It's the new 2.4 liter turbocharged boxer that they have with good power, good torque. I am a fan of CVTs when the car is turbocharged. That it feels like the torque pickup is much better down low. It doesn't lull as you're trying to get up into the upper rev ranges.
CVT done right.
Yes, exactly. You know, it's fine when it's like that, and the car feels quick-ish.
Yeah,
it never feels fast, but it gets out of its own way.
Right.
Much better than, you know, the natural aspirated 2.5 liter will feel for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've liked it. I like this. I mean, the CVT is good enough in this. Like, CVTs can be a real drag sometimes, especially if they cause the engine to drone. This one has some nice little steps built in that makes it feel a little more natural. It didn't bother me one bit, to be honest.
Ditto. Like, if a CVT bugs me, I'm like, it's not doing its job. Mm-hmm. In this case, you could have told me this is a 6-speed auto, and I mean, I would have known the difference had I thought about it, but not really thinking about it, it was fine. Yeah. Not a big deal.
And the rest of the car, I mean, I feel like the chassis sorted out really well. It just feels really good going down the highway, and then it's super comfortable, super stable, and then you get off the highway, and it's kind of fun. It's responsive. The steering feels a little artificial, but it's precise and easy. I was lucky enough to have a lot of snow on the road when I was driving this home.
Man.
And man, this, I don't know, Subaru, there's something about Subarus in the snow. They just, and, you know, I was driving the Outback, you know, which, you know, similar, but that was on dirt roads. when the road gets a little soft and loose, these things feel so good. They feel like they're in their natural element. This Legacy, I was, you know, going around a corner, hard packed snow. I'm like, let's feed in a little more power without, you know, doing anything with the traction control or anything. And it happily, you know, gets a little bit of a drift going and just and holds it, you know, and I without any feeling like I'm gonna spin out or I'm gonna, you know, toss the car too far off to the side or anything like that. And you can just sort of sustain it, and it's really fun, really controlled and really fun.
I actually noticed the same thing when I I goosed it around a corner one time when it was wet out.
Yeah.
When I was driving in, and it was like, oh, a little bit of opposite lock here yeah. now. this is fun.
Yeah.
I was not expecting it, honestly, from the
legacy.
From
yeah.
the legacy.
Yeah, so. But it was there.
Yeah.
Subaru, I think this new platform that they're sort of rolling out across their product portfolio yeah. is really good portfolio.
It is.
Really good platform.
It is. It's sturdy. A lot of the, sort of ride imperfections are ironed out. It's quieter, it's stiffer, it's just, yeah, it's better. Every car that they've put on that so far, the Forester, the Outback, and the Legacy, it's made a huge improvement for all of those.
I think it's really, improvement across the board, and little things too, like the steering just seems a little bit better,
right.
The brakes seem a little bit better. I think this is a very smart move. A lot of times companies talk about how, well, we invested all this money in this platform, and your average consumer, okay, what does that mean? This, as critics, I think it does. It's demonstrably better.
So I'm curious as to what you guys think. And this is an interesting segment. There's some good cars in it. The Accord, the Mazda 6. Yeah, well,
the Altima has all-wheel drive now too.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, any ideas of what you'd pick?
I think
for me, it would be if living here in Michigan, it would be a Legacy. If I didn't live in Michigan where there was snow, I would go with the Mazda 6.
I am Accord every day, no matter where I'm living.
It's a great car.
I would just buy winter tires for it. I'd get the 2-liter. I'd be happy with either the manual or the automatic. Honestly, if it was a daily driver, both transmissions are fantastic to use. And the car just handles and drives so much better than pretty much everything in the segment. It is, and I also think it's the best looking car in the segment as well. You get the sport trim with the big wheels and the thing, it just rises above everything else for me, even without all-wheel drive. It's the car I'd pick.
I would go with Mazda 6. I just think it's slightly better looking than the Accord. Both great looking. I would go with a Mazda 6. I think it's really a great looking car, fun to drive.
Yep.
I will give this caveat. If it were like, I'm going to spend, $36,000, hypothetically, $36,795, like this Subaru costs, I would strongly look at the Subaru though, simply because you get the all-wheel drive and it does do a lot of things well. The infotainment might actually turn me off a little bit because it is a little overdone. But I guess I could also say that about the Mazda. I don't really like Mazda's in-car connectivity features. But for me, slight edge, Mazda.
I love the handling. Since they updated the Mazda 6, they just did some tweaks underneath the skin. And then, gave it the really nice interior for the higher trim levels. It's pretty fantastic. It handles super well in corners. It sets in and locks, and you can feel it's like tugging itself back down on the outside. And it's really confidence inspiring. That's what I would pick if I lived in California or something. But just I wouldn't want to miss out on how fun Subarus are in the snow if I'm living in Michigan.
I will say this: there is something about being in the winter where I want as much capability on my side as I can get in the winter in Michigan. So that's where when I really start to think buying decisions for myself, that's where you do start to maybe steer towards all-wheel drive. I don't know. I drove it was either a 6 or maybe a 3 last year Mazda in January or February, and it was fine. Zach, you probably don't remember the car spreadsheet off the top of your head, but I feel like we had one of these. It was cold out. It may have been on winters. It may not have been. But I mean, they're front wheel drive cars. They'll be okay.
Yeah.
So, kind of a counterpoint, but I do like a lot of capability in the snow.
The best car I've ever driven in the snow, to be honest, and this is a little tangent, was a Mazda 2 with BlizzAx on it.
That sounds like a crazy experience.
We had one. We had a long-termer, and this was back in the winding road days, and we had this snowstorm. It was the first time they started using the term snowpocalypse and told everyone to stay in, and my wife and I wanted to pick up a growler at the brewery down the street. So we went out and, you know, we were passing Grand Cherokees and stuff. This with the smaller wheels and, you know, the Blizzaks on it. It was just a monster in the snow. It was great. So yeah, there's something to be said for front wheel drive with snow tires.
Especially if you have a physical handbrake.
Yeah.
That makes everything better.
So what year was this, if you recall?
Oh, God.
I'm going to guess like 10, somewhere in there.
Yeah, I don't remember, to be honest.
Around that same period.
I can figure it out.
We had a long-term BRZ on winter tires at Auto Week.
Oh, man.
And I wouldn't say that was good in the snow, but man, that was a lot of fun. And I had plenty of confidence, too, especially like... Mm-hmm. I mean, jumping on like the expressways, you get a little nervous, but like just around town or like on an open road where there's nobody really around you and you're like, whatever, I can shift the gears. If I spin out, okay, I spin out, you know?
Yeah.
Winter tires, I think that's what we're coming at. We're coming around to here.
You know, I drove the BRZ on ice, with studded tires, but but that was really something. That was fun. But I've known dudes who, you know, drive BRZs year round, put snow tires on them and just go nuts.
Yeah, BRZ is a great car. And I guess we'll just leave it there. We're out of time this week. Thanks for listening to the Autoblog podcast. Be safe out there. Roads are getting slick as we are noting here about our winter tire sort of a little tangent. But yeah, be safe out there and we'll see you next time.